Our scripture for today is taken from the Gospel of St. Mark, chapter 1, beginning with verse 40. As you are turning there, let me thank you continually for your support of what we do for Texas and Mississippi. We're going to be hearing from those pastors in terms of the impact that we are making through our generosity, and we certainly look forward to what the Lord is going to release through MT2540. Mark chapter 1, beginning with verse 40, the word of the Lord is as follows. A man with leprosy came and knelt in front of Jesus, begging to be healed. If you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean, he said. Moved with compassion, Jesus reached out and touched him. I am willing, he said, be healed. Instantly, the leprosy disappeared, and the man was healed. Then Jesus sent him on his way with a stern warning. Don't tell anyone about this. Instead, go to the priest. Let him examine you. Take along the offering required in the law of Moses for those who have been healed of leprosy. This will be a public testimony that you have been cleansed. But the man went and spread the word, proclaiming to everyone what had happened. As a result, large crowds soon surrounded Jesus, and he couldn't publicly enter a town anywhere. He had to stay out in the secluded places, but people from everywhere kept coming to him. Thus far, the word of the Lord. Man with leprosy came and knelt in front of Jesus, begging to be healed. If you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean. Moved with compassion, Jesus reached out and touched him. I am willing, he said, be healed. I want to preach today from the subject, The God Who Is, Part 2. Last week, we asserted that this past year has been one that provoked serious questions about the person and nature of God. It is mind-boggling to consider the fact that we have just completed 365 days of this COVID-19 reality being in our world and in our country. In the course of this time, we've not only dealt with a health pandemic, but we've also dealt with a racial reckoning. And within this period of time, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, have been killed 1 year ago. We would later have to deal with George Floyd and others. We would then be dealing with the big lie of a stolen election and an insurrection. This has been a time, nationally, but also personally, for many people, that has provoked serious questions about the person and nature of God in the midst of what we've been facing. The church, as we asserted last week, is uniquely equipped to enter that space based upon the revelation of God in Jesus Christ, that Jesus reveals God uniquely, definitively, and comprehensively. And as we looked at Isaiah 53, we saw that Jesus reveals God to be the God who enters human vulnerability and makes himself vulnerable. That Jesus reveals God to be the God who enters into brokenness and allows himself to be broken. And that God is the God who takes our place in order that we might have a place with him. When thinking about the various questions that one has asked, that I've asked, one of the questions that is often raised about God is God's primary disposition towards us. What is God's primary disposition towards us? More pointedly, what is God's disposition to those whom society shuns, neglects, and marginalizes? How is God disposed to those whom society disregards? More broadly speaking, is God interested in who we are, what is going on in our lives, and how we are faring? In this time of isolation, dislocation, distress, disappointment, and grief, does God feel us? And if so, what is the level and manner of that interest and feeling? Does it go to the level of actually being bothered with us, being involved with us, making contact with us? This question is very much at play within the passage before us. In the Gospel of Mark, Jesus is presented as one who is very much on the move. Mark's gospel often reads like a travelogue, a documentary of the goings and comings, arrivals and departures of Jesus. In the first chapter alone, Jesus' baptism, temptation, calling of the first disciples, casting out demons, healing of people, and preaching are given. Jesus in Mark is intentional in action and communication. His walk, his words, and his work are pregnant with power and purpose. Nothing is accidental or arbitrary with Jesus. And so it rolls on until you get to verse 40. While Jesus is supposedly preaching in Galilee, a man with leprosy kneels in front of him, begging to be healed. He tells Jesus, "If you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean." This incident with the leper is powerful on so many different levels. Here is a man with a lethally debilitating and contagious disease that made his life one of perpetual isolation, humiliation, marginalization, and physical deterioration. Social distancing was a requirement for him and those like him. He was quarantined to a colony that was outside of the city, that lived on the fringes of society. And added to this was the religious stigma of being what was called ceremonially unclean. He was denied proximity to the fellowship of the saints and the worship of God. His was not a two-week quarantine, it was a lifelong quarantine. The depth of isolation and stigma was codified in Levitical law. In Leviticus chapter 13, verses 45 through 46, it was written, "Those who suffer from a serious skin disease must tear their clothing and leave their hair uncombed. They must cover their mouth and call out, 'Unclean, unclean.' As long as the serious disease lasts, they will be ceremonially unclean. They must live in isolation in their place outside the camp." It was his indignity to have to shout "unclean" wherever he walked to alert people so that they could avoid walking in his path. Because if they walked in his path, they too would become ceremonially unclean. This leper was literally considered to be among the living dead, because to touch him was seen as detrimental as touching a dead body. Well, this is the case with all of the societal and religious convention barring him from coming near people. The leper comes near Jesus, kneels in front of Jesus, and begs to be healed, saying, "If you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean." Notice, friends, that the leper has no doubt about Jesus' ability. He asserts Jesus' power, saying, "You can heal me and make me clean." The word for "can" in this instance means to be able. The leper asserts that Jesus is able. There's no doubt in the ability, in the power, in the capacity of Jesus. Hear him: "You can heal me and make me clean. You are able to heal me. You are able to make me clean. You are sufficient to the task. My brothers and sisters, when it comes to Jesus, the assertion, you are able, you can, is always correct. He is able. That's what the Hebrew boys said. Reverend Potts referred to it. The thing that we know is our God is able. My friends, declaring the power and the ability of God is always the correct assertion. He is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think according to the power that is at work within us. He is able to aid those who are tempted. He is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you always, having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. He is able to save to the uttermost those whom come to God through him. He is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding great joy. He is able to keep what you have committed unto him against that day. Whenever you talk about God and you want to be correct, to be able to say God is able is always the correct assertion. The leper confidently and forcefully states, you can heal me and make me clean. And if that was all that he said, we'd be okay. But he puts something in front of it. He says, if you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean. And with those words, the leper is raising a question. Is Jesus willing? Is the able, capable, and sufficient Jesus willing to engage his power on the leper's behalf? Is Jesus willing to make who Jesus is and what Jesus possesses available to this leper? I had to make sure that I was hearing what the leper was asking, and so I had to dig in to find what that word was for willing. And that word for willing speaks to the desire that comes from one's emotions. The desire that comes from one's emotions. When the leper says, if you are willing, the leper isn't simply referring to a mental decision. No, he's speaking to an emotional disposition. He's asking Jesus, literally, can you feel me? He knows that Jesus has the power to heal him, but he questions whether Jesus has the ability and the desire to feel him. Does Jesus feel what's beneath the facts of his leprosy? Does Jesus feel the humiliation, the embarrassment, the shame, the stigma, the helplessness, and the hopelessness? Can Jesus feel the leper? Can Jesus get with the isolation, the loneliness, the disruption, the despair, the resignation that has been the leper's lot? Can Jesus be bothered with what bothers the leper, the fears that bother the leper, the frustrations that bother the leper? That's been a question from March 2020 to March 2021. Does God feel me? Does God have a desire to move on my behalf based upon God not just knowing the facts, but God also knowing the feelings? Does God feel the pain that's beneath the facts, the distress that's beneath the facts, the heartache that's beneath the facts, the estrangement, the discomfort, the confusion, the rejection, and the despondency? Can God feel me? Can God be bothered by what bothers me? Can God be disturbed by what disturbs me? Can God be troubled by what troubles me? Can God be burdened by what burdens me? Can God be grieved by what grieves me? Anybody ever raise that question? God, do you feel me? God, can you get with me? God, can you understand what's beneath what you see? God, can you be moved by what's going on in my life? If you're willing, you can heal me and make me clean. Jesus' response answers the question, shows us something about the God who is God. The first thing that Jesus reveals is that God is a God who is willing to take time and make space for us. God is the God who is willing to take time and make space for us. Mark does not tell us what Jesus was doing prior to the leper's arrival. However, with Mark's emphasis on Jesus being the Jesus that's on the go, the Jesus who is active, we must assume that Jesus was doing something wherever Jesus was. Matthew's version gives us a hint in Matthew chapter 8, verse 1. Matthew tells us large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Suddenly, a man with leprosy approached him and knelt before him. Chapter 8 follows chapter 7, and that chapter 7 ends Jesus' sermon on the mount. Jesus has given this extended sermon on a mountainside that started with the Beatitudes and ends telling them to seek first the kingdom of God and to stand on the word so that you can be like a man who built his house upon a rock. And so right after Jesus gives this sermon, Jesus is surrounded by a crowd and he is traveling down the mountainside when the leper appears. The leper was not on the itinerary. He's not scheduled, does not have an appointment, has not pre-registered, wasn't related to apostles who were bringing him through back channels. The leper breaks in and interrupts Jesus's flow of movement. The leper breaks societal regulations that barred him from coming near. He goes and kneels before Jesus, begging him, saying, "If you're willing, you can heal me and make me clean." Notice that Jesus does not walk past the leper or walk away from the leper. Jesus engages the leper. Jesus takes time and makes space for the leper. The leper's interruption does not disrupt Jesus. And as such, Jesus reveals God to be the God who takes time and makes space for us. That our God, the God who is the eternal God. And as the eternal God, God has all time at all time. And what that means is that God has time for all of us such that no time that we approach God is a disruption. That what we even might perceive as interrupting God by an unscheduled prayer is never an interruption or disruption, because God has as much time allotted for us as God has for everybody else at the same time. That God never has call waiting, where you are put on hold because God is listening to someone else. No, God has as much time allotted for us as he has for everybody at the same time. I can't fathom how God does it. I can barely have one conversation at a time, not to mention two conversations at a time. But imagine the infinite amount of conversations that God has all at the same time, and he equally gives time to everybody who's accessing his line. In other words, friends, while on others, God is calling, God is equally available to us. God is equally accessible to us. God is equally open to us. Jesus has time for the leper. But he not only has time for the leper, he has space for the leper. According to custom, the leper was to keep a distance away from people. Yet as the leper comes near to Jesus, approaching Jesus, Jesus does not move away from him. Jesus neither backs up nor moves to the side. Jesus maintains his stance where he is with the leper with leprosy approaching him. With the leper advancing, coming closer to Jesus with leprosy, Jesus stands right where he is. Now, in this COVID-19 reality, imagine somebody with the active virus unmasked, walking in your direction, coughing with a 102-degree fever. I know if that person knowingly was approaching me, there is absolutely no way I would be standing still where I was and they are coming closer. In fact, I do all I can to walk around and away from people with no mask on. Jesus, here is a man with active leprosy walking in his direction, and Jesus stays right where he is. Jesus reveals God to be the God who has space for what we bring towards him. He does not move away from us as we come to him with what would cause others to be distant. He is the God who has space for us. As Jesus had space for the leper's leprosy, so does Jesus have space for whatever we bring to him. Whatever we bring with us as we are advancing him, Jesus does not back away or move aside. He allows us to come near. He is touched with the feeling of our infirmities at all points. He was tempted, yet without sin, and we can therefore come boldly before the throne of grace and obtain mercy. Find grace to help in time of need. Here it is. His grace makes space for us so that we can approach him. His grace makes space for us as we come with imperfection, as we come with weakness, as we come with shortcoming, as we come with what should keep us away from him. His grace makes space for us. My friend, if you don't understand how important that is, you should know this, that I don't care whatever you've done, however far you've fallen, the one person you should never be distant from is Jesus. No. That's the last person you should be distant from, because his grace makes space for you to come near. His grace makes space for us. God is the God who's willing to take time and make space for us. When what we should have caused him to not to be bothered with us, not avail himself, not to be accessible, his grace makes space for us. There it is. Unscheduled, breaking all social convention, all religious custom, coming near Jesus. Jesus takes time, makes space for him to come. And he says, if you're willing, you can heal me and make me clean. Verse 41 reads, moved with compassion, Jesus reached out and touched him. I am willing, he said, be healed. Here's something else that Jesus reveals about God. Jesus reveals God to be the God who is personally impacted. The word for compassion here literally refers to one's bowels or one's womb. It is to be deeply affected in one's innermost being. The leper's condition connects with Jesus. In other words, Jesus doesn't just see his condition, but Jesus feels his condition. And Jesus feels it in its totality. Jesus feels not just the physical pain, he feels the emotional and psychological pain. He feels the illness and the isolation. He feels the desperation, the depression, and the despondency. It's a gut punch that reaches the bowels, that reaches the womb. My brother, I want you to know, my sister, God feels you. I want you to understand, God does feel what's beneath what God sees. God does feel the pain beneath the facts, the distress beneath the facts, the heartache beneath the facts, the estrangement, the discomfort, the confusion, the rejection. You see, there are people who may see what you're going through, but they can't feel what you're going through. God doesn't just see what you're going through, but God feels what you're going through, and God feels it in the very bowels of his being. Deeply, deeply, God feels you. Intimately, God feels you. Completely, God feels you. Comprehensively, God feels you. So personal. So personal is the impact on Jesus. So intimate is the man's connection with Jesus that Mark says Jesus is moved. Jesus is moved to seek connection with the leper. Bowels move. He's moved by what he feels in the very bowels of his being, and therefore he reaches out and touches the man, saying, I am willing, be healed. Jesus reaches towards the man. Jesus extends himself towards the man. And as such, Jesus reveals that God is the God who extends himself. He reveals God to be the God who is willing to stretch. That our God is a stretching God. He's the God who extends himself to make contact and connection with us. God does not just create time and make space for our approaching him, but God also stretches and extends himself toward us. God stretches with making contact in mind. With Adam and Eve hiding out in the garden out of fear, God extends himself in search of them. He extends a word in the cool of the day. Adam, where are you? God is constantly extending himself towards us with connection in mind. God is constantly and continually reaching out for you and for me. Jesus reached out and put his hand on the leper. The leper has been without human contact for years. Ever since his initial diagnosis, he has not known the touch of another human being. And here he is, the eternal God, made flesh, reaching out and touching him. This was no tentative touch. This was firm contact. This was intentional contact. God is a hands-on God. What nobody else can or is willing to put their hands on or in or upon, God is the God who stretches forth and puts his hand on a leprous situation. God puts his hand on the man. It's a sign of benediction. And if you understand something about the Old Testament history, you know that Jesus does what Elisha did not do with Naaman. In 2 Kings, there's the story of this Syrian captain named Naaman, who is stricken with leprosy. And he is advised to go to Israel, where there is a prophet of God that might be able to heal him. And he goes to where Elisha is, and Elisha sends a messenger out to him, Gehazi, to tell him, go to the Jordan and dip 7 times, with Naaman thinking that Elisha was going to put his hands on him or at least give an incantation. All Elisha tells him to do is go dip in the Jordan River. Jesus, what Elisha is not willing to do, to make actual contact with a leprous Naaman, here Jesus is touching the leper, revealing God to be the God who stretches beyond what we do. My brothers and sisters, there will never be a moment where God will ask you to do more than what God has already done, is doing, or is willing to do. God is the God who always does more. God does first. God speaks first. God provides first. God gives first. God extends first. God commanded healing into the man. Jesus says, I'm willing, be healed. And with that, the leprosy left, the man was healed. Jesus addresses the root cause of the man being declared unclean was the illness of leprosy. And immediately the leprosy left him. What I found interesting in studying the passage is that Jesus's speech and touch were simultaneous. That is to say, if you just read it in the English, it can make it seem like Jesus says something and then touches him. But when you do the research, you find that Jesus's speech and touch were simultaneous. That is, as Jesus was speaking, Jesus was touching. Lord have mercy. As Jesus was talking, Jesus was moving. As Jesus was articulating, Jesus was acting. And because, friends, for the Lord, there is never any space between what God says and what God does. When God is saying something, God is doing something. At the same time, when he's saying something, he's doing something. When he's saying something, he's making something happen. When he's saying something, he's working something out. But I found something else out as I did a little research. I discovered that before Jesus spoke and touched, Jesus had to think. His thought preceded his speech and touch. That Jesus' desire for healing preceded his speaking and touching healing. That Jesus' determination preceded his action. And therefore, when Jesus spoke and touched, the man was already clean. Because what Jesus' speech and action were doing were they were confirming what Jesus had desired and decided. that the healing was in effect with the determination. And the words and touch confirmed what Jesus had already determined. I just need for somebody to hear this. Whatever God says to you is a confirmation of what God has decided and determined. That the determination was made before God spoke it to you. And God speaking it to you is the confirmation of what God has decided. In other words, God is not one who thinks as he talks. No. God has already thought before he said something. God has already determined before he has spoken to you. God has already made up in his mind before God has ever made you aware of what's been on his mind. And so when God speaks it, it is already done in the mind of God. Lord have mercy. It's already done. There was a song that says, it's already done in the spirit. Lord have mercy. It's already done. If God has given you a promise, a word, it's already done. It's already done. It's already done. It's already done. But look now. At the point of Jesus touching the man with leprosy, all expectations were that Jesus would become leprous himself. That's the expectation, because that is what happens to everybody who touches a leper. No gloves, no mask, no PP equipment, no personal protective gear. You touch a leper, you become leprous. And so as Jesus puts his hand on the man, and you got to know that there's a crowd watching. This breaks societal, this breaks religious, this breaks therapeutic convention. To touch a leper, they expect Jesus to become leprous. But nothing happens. Jesus' skin doesn't change. No sores come upon him. No pus emerges. Because Jesus' power is such that he can touch a man with leprosy and not be negatively affected by the man. That his power is greater than the leprosy. That's why Jesus can come in contact with us and our stuff not impact him in a negative way. Lord have mercy. He can enter a situation and the situation not become him. He can stay the same. He can be the same. He can maintain who he is because his power is greater than the sickness. His power is greater than the illness. His power is greater than the dysfunction. His power is greater than the weakness. He touches the leper and the leprosy leaves the leper, does not come upon him, and the man is made whole. Now, with this having been done, leprosy gone, Jesus gives an unusual instruction. Don't tell anyone. Don't tell nobody. As a matter of fact, in the tense, it is a strict command. Tell nobody. Go and show yourself to the priest. Give an offering as required by the law of Moses, that there might be a public testimony. Now, this man has been sick, marginalized, humiliated, stigmatized, weakened, isolated, and Jesus has healed him, caused the leprosy to leave, and Jesus tells the man, don't tell nobody. Why would Jesus command the man not to say anything to anybody? That seems like an impossible request. Some scholars suggest that Jesus' instructions on silence could be that Jesus did not want the mission, his mission, to be understood. He didn't want to be pigeonholed as a simple healer of physical illness. The healing that the leper received did not shield the leper from death. The leper would eventually die from something. Jesus' proclamation of the kingdom was one that was far greater than physical healing, which was temporary in effect. Because, friends, everybody whom Jesus healed still died of something. The woman with the issue of blood, she ain't still walking around. Lazarus ain't still bopping around. The widow of Nain's son still ain't popping up. They all died of something after Jesus healed them, after Jesus raised them. They still died. Because that was not Jesus' fundamental purpose for coming into the world, was not to be a healer. Jesus came to deal with death itself. Jesus does not declare himself to be the healer of disease, but he does declare himself to be the resurrection and the life. That those who believe in him, though they would perish, yet shall they live. And those who live and believe in him shall never die. Death and resurrection. That's what Jesus was about addressing. The ultimate aim of Christ is not healing of corruptible bodies. It is our experiencing resurrection where the corruptible will put on incorruption and the mortal will put on immortality. It is for this earthly house of this tabernacle to be dissolved and for us to enter another building of God, eternal in the heavens, not made by hands. Perhaps that's why Jesus tells the man, don't tell anybody, because he doesn't want to be pigeonholed as a simple healer of disease. But maybe there's another explanation within this context. Jesus healed the man of the leprosy, which had caused him to be declared unclean by the priests, which resulted in his displacement, dislocation, and isolation. And in order for the man to be declared clean and to be able to return to society, he had to go to the priests to be declared clean. There was an offering for him to give, and that his doing so would be the occasion for a public testimony to be given. The priests would testify that he was clean. And that perhaps Jesus telling the man, don't tell anyone, Jesus was warning against the man being distracted from doing what he needed to do for a public testimony to be given. That perhaps Jesus was saying, bruh, you'll need to stop and visit people before you get to the priest. No, you just need to show up to the priest, give your offering as required by the law, and the priest will give a public testimony that just showing up and doing what he had not been able to do would cause the priest to testify. In other words, he wouldn't have to say a word. All he'd have to do is just show up. Just show up, bruh, with no sores, no pus oozing, no stench, no foul odor. Just show up, bruh. No limping, no crawling, no begging. Just show up with your hair combed now. Just showing up would be evidence that will move the priests to testify. Lord, have mercy. God is the God whose work in our lives is such that it will motivate others to testify. Yes, my brother, my sister, it's your experience, but other people testify about it. It's your change, but others talk about it. It's your deliverance, but others are speaking about it. Others are tweeting about it. Others are posting about it. It's your breakthrough, but others are testifying. It's your turnaround, but others are testifying. All you got to do is show up. All you got to do is show up with the change, show up with the healing, show up with the deliverance, show up with the breakthrough. And others will talk about the way God made a way out of no way. Others will talk about how God was able to keep you in perfect peace. Others will talk about how God was able to keep the smile on your face and the pleasantness in your disposition. All that you got to do is show up. And others will testify. Bro, you ain't got to do nothing. Just show up. Others will testify. That's how it should have ended. With the man just showing up to the priest, giving his offering, and the priest testifying that he's clean. That's how it should have ended. That's what Jesus said. That's what Jesus desired. But then you get verse 45. But the man went and spread the word, proclaiming to everybody what had happened. As a result, large crowds soon surrounded Jesus, and he couldn't publicly enter a town anywhere. He had to stay out in the secluded places. But people from everywhere kept coming to him. It should have ended with the man going to the priest, paying his offering, and the priest testifying. That's how it was supposed to end. That's what Jesus said do. That's what Jesus was looking for. But the man went, spread the word, proclaiming to everybody what had happened. The impact upon the man was too great for him to keep quiet. How could he keep what Jesus did a secret? How could he keep Jesus' feeling him a secret? How could he hold his peace with Jesus taking time and making space for him? How could he keep quiet with Jesus having extended himself and touched him and healed him? I know what Jesus directed. I heard what Jesus instructed. I know what Jesus intended. And I want to say right now, I don't commend the man's doing what he did. I will never commend somebody for not following Jesus' instructions, for not going with what Jesus has so clearly outline. I do not commend what the man did, but can I say I understand his doing what he did? I don't co-sign with the man not following Jesus' instructions of going to the priest paying his offering that there might be a public testimony, but I can understand, Lord have mercy, I can understand why the man could not keep it to himself. I understand why the man could not be quiet. I understand why the man could be distracted with going to tell family, look at what Jesus has done for me, because God is the God, Lord have mercy, whose work in our lives is so profound that we cannot keep quiet. I wonder, am I talking to anybody? Because when you think about the Lord feeling you, you understand why the man couldn't keep quiet. When you think about the Lord being bothered with what bothers you and being troubled by what troubles you and being burdened by what burdens you, you understand why the man couldn't keep quiet. When you consider the Lord stretching himself out to you, you cannot keep quiet. When you think about the lengths that God went to make contact with you, you cannot hold your peace. I don't know about you, but when I think about how God stretched for me, my God, when I think about the lengths that God went to make contact with me, I can't keep quiet. When I think about God stretching himself by sending his son Jesus into the world, I really can't keep quiet. I got to raise the volume. It's not the sound man that's raising the volume. I've got to raise the volume when I think about Jesus on a hill called Calvary. Lord have mercy. When I think about Jesus hung high and stretched wide for me, I can't keep quiet and I can't be silent. When I think about his being wounded for me and being bruised for me and being chastened for me and having stripes for me, I cannot be quiet and I can't go low monotone. I gotta raise the volume. When I think about Jesus dying for my sins and being buried for my being and then being raised on the third day, I really can't keep quiet. When I think about the Lord saving me, when I think about the Lord forgiving me, when I think about the Lord touching me, when I think about the Lord holding me, I can't keep quiet. I hear the sounds of the old saints who's put it like this. I said I wasn't gonna tell nobody. Lord, have mercy, but I couldn't keep it to myself. I said I wasn't gonna sing my song, but I could not keep it to myself. I said I wasn't gonna shout for joy, but I could not keep it to myself. I said I wasn't gonna run for Jesus, but I could not keep it to myself, because you ought to have been there, Lord, have mercy, when he saved my soul. You ought to have been there when he put my name on the roll. I started running. I started shouting. I started singing. I started dancing because what the Lord has done for me. Am I talking to somebody who can say, I don't condone what the leper did, but I do understand the motivation, because nobody knows like you know what the Lord has done for you. Nobody was there when the Lord made contact with you. Nobody was there in the depth of your feeling. And the Lord not only felt you, but the Lord lifted you. The Lord not only felt you, but the Lord healed you. The Lord not only felt you, but the Lord delivered you. The Lord not only felt you, but the Lord lifted you up and turned you around. Am I talking to anybody? Is there anybody who can just pulse? If you only knew what the Lord has done for me, if you only knew how the Lord kept me, if you only knew the extent on which the Lord extended himself on my behalf, if you only knew what was happening in your house, if you only knew what was happening in your body, if they only knew what was happening on your job, if they only knew what was happening in your mind, if they only knew what was happening in your spirit, then they'd understand why you can't help yourself. But since nobody knows like you know, you ought to just say, my hallelujah, my praise, my offering, my thanksgiving, my worship belongs to you.